This morning we begin our summer series, and we're going to be, over the next few weeks, exploring part of the story of the Israelites. Asking that question, what does it mean to have courage to follow God wherever he leads? In a moment I'm going to read the passage, Numbers 13, all about Moses sending out the 12 to explore the land that God had promised them. Came across a description from a commentator, a guy called Ronald Allen. And this is what he says about this particular chapter. He says, we seem to be at a new beginning when we enter this chapter. The vindication of Moses, the servant of the Lord, has been stunning and unforgettable. The presence of the people in the vastness of numbers here on the plateau of Paran is undeniable. The desire of the people to enter the land of promise is unquestionable. The faithfulness of the Lord to his promise and his commitment to his people are sure and unalterable. Given all the experiences that the people have gone through in the previous months of preparation and journey, at last, at long last, it was time to claim God's word, to believe in his power, to march in his name and enter the land. I think he's right. This sense of possibility of what would have been on the horizon, it surely must have been palpable amongst the people of God. Finally, they're going to receive all that God has promised them, all that they have been building to. They're going to enter the land that they have been longing after. They're going to finally get to stop walking, if nothing else. At last, they're going to settle as the people of God. As they say, what could possibly go wrong? Let's read chapter 13 of Numbers. The Lord said to Moses, send some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the Israelites. From each ancestral tribe, send one of its leaders. So at the Lord's command, Moses sent them out from the desert of Paran. All of them were leaders of the Israelites. These are their names. From the tribe of Reuben, Shemua, son of Zakur. From the tribe of Simeon, Shaphat, son of Hori. From the tribe of Judah, Caleb, son of Jephunneh. From the tribe of Issachar, Igal, son of Joseph. From the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, son of Nun. From the tribe of Benjamin, Palti, son of Raphu. From the tribe of Zebulun, Gadol, son of Sodi. From the tribe of Manasseh, a tribe of Joseph, Gadi, son of Susi. From the tribe of Dan, Meel, son of Gamili. From the tribe of Asher, Sethur, son of Michael. From the tribe of Naphtali, Naba, son of Vophsi. And from the tribe of Gad, Gul, son of Machi. These are the names of the men Moses sent to explore the land. Moses gave Hoshea, son of Nun, the name Joshua. When Moses sent them to explore Canaan, he said, go up through the Negev and on into the hill country. See what the land is like and whether the people who live there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they unwalled or fortified? How is the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there trees in it or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land. It was the season for the first ripe grapes. So they went up and explored the land from the desert of Zin as far as Rehob towards Lebo Hamath. They went up through the Negev and came to Hebron, where Hahim, Sesher, and Talmah, the descendants of Anak, lived. Hebron had been built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. When they reached the valley of Eshkol, they cut off a branch bearing a single cluster of grapes. Two of them carried it on a pole between them, along with some pomegranates and figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshkol because of the cluster of grapes the Israelites cut off there. At the end of 40 days, they returned from exploring the land. They came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. who went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev. The Hittites, Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hill country. And the Canaanites live near the sea and along the Jordan. Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We can't attack these people. They are stronger than we are." And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, "The land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim, where the descendants of Anak come from the Nephilim. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them." The scene at the start of the chapter, God says to Moses in verse 2, "Send some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I'm giving to the Israelites. From each ancestral tribe, send one of its leaders." It's a scene that brings with it anticipation and, I believe, expectation. Yes, it could have simply been Moses gathering those 12 individuals and sending them out. Personally, I like to picture something more of a kind of a carnival atmosphere that would have taken place. You know, a cast of thousands, literally, trying to capture something of what is taking place. This noise, this hubbub, this sending off as they go to discover what is ahead of them as a people, as these brave individuals begin their expedition. However it took place, news would have surely got round. And imagine there would have been questions abounding. What will they find? Who is it they will encounter? What stories will these individuals come back with to share? Now, surely it's only a matter of time before we make it to the promised land, right? Isn't it? You know? Or I wonder what my new home will look like. I wonder what spot I'll get, where I'll be able to settle and finally rest. We read how representatives of the different tribes are dispatched, and Moses gives them clear instructions in verses 17 to 20. They are very much on a reconnaissance mission. They are to go and scout out the land to see what it's like and bring back the report of what they find. They're heading out to survey, to research, to ascertain a true picture of what is out there. And they're given this route in verse 17. Through the Negev, the large desert region in southern Israel, and on in to the hill country. And they're told quite specifically what they need to find out. We read in verse 18 and following, you know, see what the land is like. What kind of land do they live in? What kind of towns do they live in? Are the trees there? You know, what's the soil like? Come back with information that is going to help us as we move into this place, as we move out from where we find ourselves and finally settle. Because we need to remember that the story of the Israelites doesn't just go back to the Exodus from Egypt. Now, the story of this people is of a people who have been in bondage and in slavery for generations. That would be the story that would have been passed down from father to son, from mother to daughter, and so on and so forth. So this isn't just some kind of jolly Moses needing to kind of, you know, come up with something to keep people busy, keep morale high, that sort of thing. It isn't just some kind of holiday for these 12. You know, they've won some sort of lottery. They've done really well. Their behavior's been the best, exemplary. And so they get to go for a month or so off into this exotic land. No. There is a task to do here. There is an initiative that they are to fulfill at this pivotal moment in their story. And so for 40 days, they go out and they explore the land. And then in verse 26, we're told they come back and they share the report of what they found. I don't know if you've ever sat through someone sharing holiday snaps, having been away somewhere. I don't think it happens. Maybe it still does. It doesn't happen as much these days, with kind of phones, cameras, and all that sort of stuff. You can take endless pictures, and it's not quite the same way. You put them online, that's it. But there used to be, I remember doing it, maybe with my grandparents. My granddad and my granny, I remember going to India, where my aunt and uncle lived. I remember them coming back. And I remember sitting through hours, it felt like. Maybe it wasn't, maybe it was. But hours of photos of India, of where they'd been, of what they'd seen. And to start with, it was interesting because it was, you know, different. I'd not seen these things, or I'd maybe seen some pictures of, you know, the Taj Mahal, that sort of thing, but these places they went to. But after a while, you're just like, come on, really? I don't need to know every meal that you ate or all the detail, so on and so forth. The 12, they return and they share their report. It begins, verse 27, pretty good. You know, we went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. And here is its fruit. And kind of, you know, they present this cluster of grapes that two people were carrying on a pole. So not just a kind of a punnet that you get from Jemsons. This is something that is sizable. And we've got to remember that, you know, obviously, since leaving Egypt, they've been on a steady diet of manna and quail, which I'm sure would have got a little boring after a while, a little bit repetitious. And so actually to suddenly be presented with these fruits that maybe they remember from their time in Egypt, maybe they remember seeing but never actually tasting during their time there. And not just that, but actually the quantity that they're presented with. Have you ever done that thing where you get like a pineapple or a grapefruit and you hold it up to a child's head and you say, look, it's as big as your head? I think that would have been something of what would have been going on as they passed round, as people have just kind of gone, wow, this is the land that we are heading to. This is what God has promised us. This is what is on the horizon. But the report goes on in verse 28. But the people who live there are powerful. The cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev. The Hittites, Jebusites, Amorites live in the hill country. And the Canaanites live near the sea and along the Jordan. The subtext is, in the history of bad ideas, this is pretty much up there with, you know, the worst of them. And however great this fruit looks, however much you might be ready to rest, actually, this is really not what we want to be doing. And whoever had this idea just was completely off on one that day, because this is not the direction we should be heading in. The problem is, they didn't just do a reconnaissance mission to the promised land. They didn't just come back and report the facts. No, they made a judgment call. And they saw these things and they said, therefore, this isn't the direction we should be heading in. You know, Moses sent them out to scout out the land, which they did, but they didn't just grab the details. They came back with their feelings and their input. And as we read, the text goes on to tell us that they began to spread this amongst the people. These reports of just like how bad it actually was. But yet Caleb, we read in verse 30, jumps in and he's not letting things slip away that easy. And he says, and then Caleb silenced the people before Moses. He said, we should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it. We may think, kind of, hold on a second, was he on the same trip as the other 11? You know, did they all get on a plane somewhere, but actually he ended up going to a different destination, kind of Home Alone style. And actually, was he asleep at the back of the bus for most of it? And he just kind of saw the beginning and the end and didn't grasp and take in everything else that happened. Caleb saw the same things. He traveled to the same places. He encountered exactly the same people. Yet I believe Caleb did all of those things with the promise of God ringing in his ears, with the truth of God and what he had said to them, what he had pronounced going way back, that God had brought them out of Egypt and that he was giving them this land. Questions are still to be asked, kind of, you know, maybe how they lost their perspective so quickly. And if you actually read on into chapter 14, you see that things really kind of take a downward spiral rather quickly. The people grumble. They initially want to stone Joshua and Caleb because they're kind of this opposition voice. God says, enough is enough. I've had it with you people. Moses intercedes on their behalf and God forgives them. But the consequences of all of this is that it will be their children who will see the promised land, not them. And in a very short moment, everything is lost for pretty much the entirety of this generation. In a reading I was doing this week, I came across an illustration all about impala. I don't know if you've ever come across one. They're kind of deer-like. They can apparently jump or leap 10 feet high, so 3 meters, by 30 feet, so 9 meters long, when they're kind of on a run. The thing is, though, if you put one in a zoo, put it within an enclosure, it can't jump over a 3-foot fence because it has to be able to see where it's going to land before it takes off. So for all the great potential in these creatures, you put them in a small pen, and actually they can't even get over something just as short as this. And there's only 4 people in this story who are willing to jump without seeing the landing. Acknowledging the importance of seeking God's mind and trusting in his word. Moses, Aaron, Joshua, and Caleb. Now, we might sit here, and it's very easy for me to kind of go, how did the rest of them have the wool pulled over their eyes so swiftly? How did they lose the perspective in terms of who God is? The tragic thing is, I believe it's easy for all of us to, be influenced by unworthy attitudes. It's easy for all of us at times to be corrupted by impure motives. It's possible for all of us to be manipulated by other people, however well-meaning they might be or not, as the case may be. It's easy for all of us to avert our eyes from God and the promises of his leading. As believers, we need to acknowledge a higher priority, one of waiting on God, and that importance that isn't just some optional extra, but no, that is an essential part of what it means to be believers. It's not about what suits me best, but what honors God the most. And how is that the driving force in terms of my life, in terms of the direction that I take, in terms of the big things, but also in terms of the daily smaller things? Raymond Brown put it, the Israelites, they magnified the problem and minimized the resources. And I don't know if we ever do that. We make a mountain out of a molehill, so to speak. Yet as we increase the size of the mountain, we minimize the size of God's power and the ability we perceive him to have to do anything about it. And so in this passage, in this story, if there was ever kind of a glass half full, half empty moment, it's as they bring their report. Because as we actually read these verses, you know, in verses 28 and 29, and they're listing the different nations that are out there, it could well have been taken as an indication for the numerous victories that God was going to fulfill. It could have been shared as there's all these people out there, but our God is greater. Our God is bigger. This may be the challenge that we're facing, but compared to our God, it is minimal. Yet they saw these people, they saw these obstacles, and they doubted what God could do. And actually kind of goes from bad to worse, really, as you follow through in chapter 14. Because some of them, they change their minds and they kind of go, well, actually, we've had second thoughts and we are going to go into the land now. Yet God has sworn that none of this generation will enter the land. And Moses warns him, he says, do not go up because the Lord is not with you. You will be defeated by your enemies. And again, The issue is not human strength or their resolve or their determination. It's the lack of the presence of God in their midst. Because they've chosen to look the other way. And so the result is sadly predictable. They're soundly defeated in battle. And the death of that generation begins, really, from there on. None of them ultimately getting to see what God has promised them. And as I was preparing this week, there was a phrase that kind of kept coming round in my mind. I think has been there to some extent over the last few months, both as we kind of back last year and we launched our fourth value of courage, but also in preparing for this series. And to kind of explain it, I need to take you back to 2007. In 2007, the Dartmoor Zoological Park was opened. And it was opened, it was bought rather, and then opened by a guy called Benjamin Mee. And following the death of his wife, he wanted to start completely afresh. And so as you do, he bought a zoo. He'd never owned one before. Soon after purchasing it, one of the jaguars escaped. And there were various other things that happened along the way. In 2011, the film We Bought a Zoo, based on his story, was released. And in this scene I'm going to play in a moment, it's one of the final scenes in the film. We find Benjamin, and he is still dealing with the loss of his wife. He's still seeking to raise his two children, Dylan and Rosie. But he's come to realize that trying to start over and forgetting his wife is not the way forward for him. But actually he needs to accept that she will always be a part of him. And so he takes Dylan and Rosie back to the place where it all began, where he first met his wife, where he first met their mother. And he shares with them what it took him to take that first step.
Where are we going?
Now hang on. So, okay. Stop. She was right there. This is the moment where both of you became a possibility.
I love that you're telling stories again.
This is the story before the story. This is where you and you begin. Because this is where I met your mom. She was sitting right there in that chair. Hang on.
Hey, so, I was walking by, and I saw, and I literally stopped like this, just stopped, and went, oh my God, that is the most beautiful woman I have ever seen in my entire life. But I've never done anything like this. I'd never gone and talked to a total stranger before, but she was right there. And so I thought to myself, 20 seconds, right? Go.
Now I'm in the restaurant, and I'm terrified, thinking about leaving. I can actually touch her. She's right there. She still hasn't seen me, and I still have 15 seconds of courage left. I'm going for it. Bravery. Here's what I said. I said, excuse me. Why would an amazing woman like you even talk to to someone like me.
Why not?
All it takes is 20 seconds of insane courage. As I read this story in Numbers, I've asked the question, what a difference 20 seconds of insane courage could have made as they brought that report. As they shared what God had actually set before them. Courage to believe the truth of God. Courage to live in the light of it. And courage to boldly step out wherever he was leading them. We might sit here, we might think our story is very different to that of the Israelites in Numbers 13 and 14. But I don't ever want to be someone who, as I follow and seek to follow God, someone who looks back and goes, I wish I had 20 seconds of insane courage to respond to what God was saying. And didn't. I believe God would say to us this morning, the road will not always be straight or level before you. The wind and rain will be harsh upon your backs at times. The enemy will seek to distract and pull you from the path, wanting to lead you to destruction. But God says, I will be with you always. My spirit equipping you for the miles that lay ahead. For the adventure that is before us. Have courage and follow me. Let us pray. Father God, I thank you for the truth that we find in your word. The truth written hundreds of thousands of years ago, but yet relevant today because you are alive and active and interested in where we find ourselves right here, right now. And I pray by your Spirit that you will come afresh upon us. That you will move within our lives as a people, as individuals. That you will equip us to follow you into all those places that you are leading us, Lord. Help us to glorify you with each step of our lives. Amen.